Welcome to the fourth day of Rohatsu Sesshin, the middle. Three days behind us, three days ahead of us. We've ascended to the top of the mountain, and now we can start the descent. But it may not look like the top of the mountain because it's completely embraced by the clouds and mist. There's no signs that it's the top. Just maybe that we're breathing less heavily for the rest of the journey. Of course, we might wish for signs that it's the top. Didn't somebody plant a flag up here or some kind of elevation marker? Just lots of fog and mist, thick. But we'll have a special mid-sesshin lunch of cornbread and chili to celebrate the top of the peak. This sesshin we're looking at Dogen Zenji's universal recommendation for the ceremony of sitting Zen. In Japanese, Fukan Zazengi. Or encouraging everyone to practice Zazen is another translation. And my venerable teacher, Tenshin Roshi, wrote an article called A Ceremony for the Encouragement of Zazen, based on this Fukan Zazengi. I think it's in the latest edition of Warm Smiles and Cold Mountains book. In this essay, Tenshin Roshi writes, Zazen is formless like vast space, yet it manifests forms in response to living beings, like the moon reflected in water. Since we may need forms to help us relate to the formless, when people first come to learn about Zazen at a Zen center, they're given instructions in how to perform a formal ceremony of Zazen. And he's picking up on this ceremony word as a possible translation of the Gi of Fukan Zazengi, which is often not translated. We often say universal recommendation, that's Fukan, for Zazen. But then there's this Gi at the end that means like manners or custom or ceremony. Fukan Zazen Gi. This is actually supposedly Dogen's handwriting. We have the Fukan Zazengi is one of the few texts that is attributed to Dogen in his own handwriting, still in the archives of Eheiji. So Tenshin Roshi says, beginners usually want to have some activity they can do, So we give them something to do. However, the zazen of our school is not something we can do. The ceremony of zazen is for tempering our tolerance for a formless practice that we cannot do. Strictly speaking, awakened Buddhist meditation is not an action done by a person. It's not another form of doing, not another form of karma. It's the function of enlightenment, the concerted activity of the entire universe. Conventionally speaking, Zen students say, "Now I'm going to the meditation hall to do zazen." However, the formal actions which you or I perform in assuming the traditional bodily posture of sitting meditation are not actually the zazen of Buddhas and ancestors. Their zazen has nothing to do with sitting or lying down. This is Dogen says in the Fukan Zazengi. These ritual forms which we humans practice are a ceremony by which we express and celebrate our devotion to the actual reality of zazen. So, you get the feeling of this? That we might give zazen instruction and how we take a certain posture and a certain hand mudra and a certain way of breathing and even a certain way of cultivating and directing the mind. But all of that is just the ceremony of zazen. It's not the actual zazen. Roshi says, "The instructions are basically established procedures for a formal ceremony that we may perform in a meditation hall or at home. But zazen cannot be reduced to that ceremony. Zazen is happening all the time, everywhere. We do the ceremony within particular limits of time and space to celebrate the limitless, all-pervasive reality of zazen. This ceremony is the central religious act of the Zen school. In a Zen monastery, or Warm Jewel Temple this week, we may practice this ceremony all day long. But it's still just a ceremony, not the totality of zazen itself. Performing the ceremony heals any gap between our life and the true zazen practice of Buddha." Performing the ceremony of zazen heals the gap between our life as a limited human person and the true zazen of the Buddhas. The ceremony heals the gap. Maybe we could even say there's a wound between our human zazen and Buddha's zazen. Or like an open sore or something. And the ceremony heals it. Roshi says, "The stillness of Buddha's sitting is not merely stillness. It is complete presence in stillness. In such presence, there is not the slightest meddling with what's happening. It is a physical and mental non-interfering with our experience. It's a thorough intimacy with whatever is happening. This is an infinitely flexible stillness that can adjust to the impermanent nature of all things, harmonizing with all situations." Beautiful expression of zazen. It's a presence in the stillness. And it's a physical and mental non-meddling, non-manipulation, not doing anything about our experience. There's experience always happening, and the Zazen is not doing anything about it, which is quite challenging. We'd like to make it a little bit calmer. We'd like to make it a little bit more comfortable. We'd like to make it a little bit more enlightened, our experience. But if we meddle with the experience, it's reifying the belief that the experience is something other than the space in which it's happening. Dogen begins the Fukan Zazengi by saying, the way is originally perfect and all-pervading. How could it depend on practice and realization? And then later, Dogen speaks of turning the light, learning the backward step of turning the light around and shining back on itself, manifesting our original face. And we can speak of this in many ways, like being aware of being aware. And being aware of being aware can also be called being aware. You follow that? Being aware of being aware. Sounds like there's two different things. There's a being aware as a subject that's being aware of an object. So I think it's a helpful way to talk about a practice one can do. Be aware of being aware. But another way to talk about that practice is just being aware.
You mean like being awareness itself?
Yeah. Yeah, being awareness itself. We can also say awareness of awareness, I think also works, but just, you know, fine-tuning the words a little bit. These days I'm appreciating the slight difference in the hearing the instruction, awareness of awareness and being aware of being aware. One's like a noun relating to a noun, and one's like a verb relating to a verb, right? Awareness of awareness sounds like a maybe something that just is the reality of what's happening, whereas being aware of being aware is a more active practice rather than a description of what's happening. So we could say there's the practice of just being aware, or the practice of being awareness, are all the same, but all these different ways are of speaking, we might relate to, different people might relate to differently. So it's nice to bring out different ones. Another one that arose in my from my storehouse consciousness this morning that and when it arose, I thought, yes, this is turning the light around and shining back, is being space. So there's all kinds of experiences happening all the time, and they're happening in space. But we think they're happening to like this body and mind, and we think the experiences are happening over there, received by this body and mind. But both this body and mind and the experiences happening to it are all happening in space. And what if we actually it's almost like a visualization or an imagination to imagine that I am space. I am the space in which everything's happening. Boundless space. And there's a body and mind in here, too. and there's a might be a painful sensation or a pleasant thought, but those aren't me. I'm the space in which they're happening. I once asked my teacher, Sokni Rinpoche, what's the difference between non-dual awareness and resting calmly in the present without any particular focus? And he said, space. There is a difference, you could say. Very slight difference. Just resting present without any particular focus. Still maybe a sense that, like, it's me resting in the present. But the non-dual awareness is like being space. And so that's not exactly a sign that we're in non-dual awareness, because strictly speaking, it has no signs, and yet maybe we could say it's like a sense of spaciousness, whereas just being present and still without any particular focus, maybe non-dual awareness, but does it have a sense of spaciousness around it? Is there a sense of a vastness in which everything is happening? So after Dogen talks about these, the vastness, the originally perfect, all-pervading way, and he says, Zazen's not a matter of sitting or lying down. Doesn't depend on any particular posture. Then he says, and this is how you sit. And then he gets into all these practical details, we could say, about the ceremony of Zazen. And to help heal this gap. So there's so many practical details that we could talk about and practice in sesshin, in both in Zazen itself and throughout the day. So here's a couple that Dogen didn't mention that I could just offer as practices we could work with, because we have days more to go, and some people are sitting many more days. At the end of every service, in the chanting, we do this, a bow to the Buddha, a bow to each other, and then the doshi goes to their seat, and there's two little bells. Ding, ding. And that is, those bells signal the end of service. And at that point, the next event is a meal. After every service, we have a ceremonial Zen meat ritual meal, and there's often like a time of hesitation after these little bells, and it may be maybe coming from a polite receptivity to the Eno's instructions of what to do next. But now we're on the fourth day of sesshin, so at those little bells, ding, ding, without, you know, rushing or anything, we can, I know some people are kind of newer to the Zendo here, but I think we get the basic gist. You can just go right to your seat, and I think the seats can pretty much stay the same. They might switch, and so, you know, depending on who's serving. So if there's some doubt about exactly where to sit, you could try to catch the Eno's eye. But in general, Just go for it. Grab a seat. So we can have a seamless flow of the service right into the ceremony of the meal. Does that make sense? I would say it's a ceremony to celebrate the zazen that's always happening. And the nice thing about the zazen that's always happening is it has no gaps, right? So it's nice to like flow right from one event into the next. So you can just, I usually just will start going to my seat. If you see me doing that, you can just go right to your seat. Another one is for the ceremony of Kinhin, that two bells ring to end Zazen and begin Kinhin, and we get up. And I know different Zen temples do these forms in different ways. So here we've been doing, you can, when we get up, turn around and arrange your seat, refresh your cushion, and you prepare it for the next period of sitting, because you've squashed it. So we can revive it, give it some life. And you can put it back, and you can even put it back on that. You don't even need to put it in the center. You can even put it where you're going to sit on it. Unless you're leaving the zendo to permanently, or to do something else. You're not coming back. But if you're going to continue the next period, you can even like leave it on the edge of your seat. And then at the end of Kinyin, we walk quickly back to our seat. We bow facing out, and then your zafu is already refreshed, so you can just, without even turning back to the wall, you can just sit. Yeah? So it's kind of like, it's another one of those eliminating the gap moments. In other words, you don't need to rearrange the seat again. You can just sit right down. So we heard various details about the posture and how the hands can rest over the abdomen if this is comfortable. I think with any of these zazen instructions, if they seem like they're very uncomfortable, then they don't need to be done in this particular way. Also, you can experiment and change different postures and different hand mudras. But another one I remembered about the hands that I forgot to mention. This is an oral instruction from Tenshin Roshi that I've long appreciated. He says, your hands like this can be, your little fingers are like lightly touching the abdomen. There's like this point of contact there. Of course, there's all these layers of clothing in between, but still you can feel it on the sides of your little fingers, and you can feel it on your abdomen. Again, the thumbs are about belly button level, so it's really like this lower abdomen encircling the dantian. Some might say this is right where the navel chakra is. And that contact point of the little fingers and the abdomen is a place where you can rest your mind, rest your weary mind. Again, this is just a ceremony. This is not zazen itself, because zazen itself has no place to rest the mind. Like the Son of God has no place to rest his head, I think it says in the Bible. But this contact point is a sweet one. It's a sweet spot, I think. And I noticed that it takes some attention to keep that light contact there, often my hands will even before I get into like major sleepiness mode, the little fingers often leave that contact point. Like right now, it looks like they're still there, but actually they're not. They're about half an inch out. And I've lost the contact. It's like making it a kind of an electrical circuit. And even just a little bit out has a slightly different feeling than when it's just actually... That contact point almost feels like it creates a full electrical circuit through the body for me. So that's something you can enjoy if you like. Some other practicalities. As I mentioned, this book, Dogen's Manuals of Zen Meditation, collects a bunch of stuff. And there's a bunch of zazengis, a bunch of ceremonies for zazen. There's the original Chinese zazengi by Sung Yi, or I can't remember, the one who wrote the pure standards for the Zen garden, Chanyuan Chingui, that Dogen bases his on. As that Chinese one, it has Dogen's first Fukan Zazengi that he wrote when he first came back from China. It has Dogen's revised Fukan Zazengi, which he changed quite a bit over the next 15 years or so. And then there's Shobo Genzo Zazengi, a chapter in the Shobo Genzo, much shorter than the Fukan Zazengi, which is very similar but different. They include different things. And there's the Bendo Ho in the Dogen's Pure Standards that talks about the round of daily life in the monastery. Also has a whole section on how to do zazen. It's almost the same, but also different. So there's like five different closely related texts. And some ones that aren't mentioned in our text of Fukan Zazengi is the revised version. So Dogen says, eat and drink moderately. The original Chinese Zazengi says that also, but it also says adjust and regulate your sleep, not too much or too little. So the middle way in sleeping and eating. And Keizan also has a zazen instruction. This is very similar to this, and he adds in a third one of clothing. I think he's talking about like temperature, like they're not too little or too much clothing. So everything's like the middle, right? And in the Shobo Genzo Zazengi, Dogen adds in about this, a quiet room is suitable. He describes the room a little bit more. He says, do not let in drafts or vapors into the room where you sit. Secure and maintain the place where you practice. Something like lock the door at night. Or sweep the floor. There are examples from the past of those who sat on a vajra or a rock, but they all put down a thick layer of grass to sit on. So it's nice to use a soft cushion. The place where you sit should be bright, both during the day and at night. Now, you never know with Dogen if he's speaking kind of like figuratively or literally. Like your zazen should be bright and clear and full of light day and night. But in fact, I think also is emphasizing, don't like turn off the lights and sit in the total pitch black. I think that's sometimes at Tassajara, like late night sitting, we turn off all the lights and sit in the dark. And it's easier to fall asleep, for one thing. So keep some light on. It's good to keep this your sitting place warm in the winter and cool in the summer. They're all middle-way instructions, right? Doesn't say how cool or how warm. It gets pretty sweltering in this Zen hall in the summer. And it gets pretty freezing in the Zen halls of Dogen's lineage in Japan in particular. But again, we could say keep our zazen warm in the winter and cool in the summer. And Dogen says also, hold dear the passing time and take to zazen as though brushing a fire off of one's head. So then in the section on the posture, cross-legged postures Dogen's talking about here, in the Shobo Genzo Zazengi, he adds in, you can see his mind, maybe people were asking him these questions, or he felt like people were missing certain points, so they're all these slightly different versions, right? When you sit zazen, you should wear an okesa, if you have one, or a rakusu is a kind of okesa. You wear the robe that expresses your devotion to Buddha. The cushion, this is, I think, if we're talking about cross-legged sitting, should not be placed completely under your legs, but only under the rear half of your legs, so you're with your spine on the cushion. It's getting kind of specific. Like, in other words, don't sit on the back edge of the cushion, which I sometimes like to do when I'm sitting just really informally. It's more like, it's softer or something maybe. But for zazen, the front edge of the cushion, Dogen says it himself, it actually keeps the lower back forward, and it also keeps the legs from falling asleep as easily. If you sit on the back of the cushion, it cuts off the circulation. Dogen discovered this 800 years ago. He said that placement on the zafu, that's the way all the Buddhas and ancestors sat when they did zazen. He also says, when you place your right foot on your left thigh and your left foot on your right thigh, he says the toes should lie along the thighs, neither extending beyond nor falling short of them. It just gets more detailed, right? So like the toes are kind of lined up with the edge of the thigh. Sometimes I've seen people, maybe especially with full lotus, maybe they teach it in yoga, where you really tie the knot tight and your foot goes way out over the edge like that. And I think he's saying, don't, that's too much. Just keep it like Buddha statues. Usually the Buddha statues look like the soles of the feet are just completely upturned, right? But so maybe they're a little bit out, but they're lined up. And press the tip of your thumbs together. Oh, he also says in the Shobo Genzo Zazengi, with your hands, place them against your body so the joined thumb tips are aligned with your navel. We've talked about that, but that's not in our original text here. The original Chinese Zengi says, keep your hips, back, neck, and head in line, making your posture like a stupa, which is like wider at the bottom, and then it's like a dome with a top sticking out. Do not strain your body upward too far, lest it make your breathing forced and unsettled. And then then we've gotten to the point in Fukan Zazengi where your eyes should always remain open and you should breathe gently through your nose. And the original Chinese Zazengi says that too. And then it actually says here, the eyes should remain open in order to prevent drowsiness. If you attain samadhi with the eyes open, it will be the most powerful. In ancient times, there were monks eminent in the practice of Zazen who always sat with their eyes open. In recent times, Zen teacher Fa Yun Yuan Tung criticized those who sit in Zazen with their eyes closed, likening their practice to the ghost cave of the Black Mountain. Surely this has deep meaning known to those who practice Zazen. That's the Chinese Zazengi talking about the eyes. And in Dogen's conversations with his teacher Ru Jing in the Hokyoki, Dogen gets into some of these practical things with his teacher too. And Ru Jing instructs him, when you do Zazen, this is Dogen's journals from his time in China, right? Ru Jing says, when you do Zazen, put your tongue on the front roof of your mouth. If after 40 or 50 years of Zazen practice, you are accustomed to sitting without drooping or becoming drowsy, then it's all right to close your eyes during Zazen. Those who are not so accustomed to Zazen should sit with the eyes open. I like how he says, beginners of Zazen, in Zazen, are your beginner for the first 40 to 50 years. After 40 or 50 years of Zazen, then you're like, you know, then you're kind of like accustomed. You're accustomed to Zazen. And then you can sit with your eyes open. I think meaning like you won't fall asleep. So, and I think it is interesting to me that having studied and practiced in many different Buddhist traditions, because I love the Dharma and I love exploring all its different facets, I noticed that in pretty much in all the Theravada schools, so like Vipassana in America, generally the instruction is to sit with your eyes closed. And all the Mahayana schools, all the different Zen schools and Tibetan schools tend to emphasize eyes open, at least a little bit. Not wide open, a little bit. Some actually have wide open. So is it just a random coincidence? Or is there something about the Mahayana, the great vehicle, as embodied in Avalokiteshvara, the regarder of the cries of the world, the seer of the world's cries? That's what kan means seeing, amongst other things. And she is the our example of the Mahayana, right? Great compassion is open to the cries of the world. She sees the cries of the world, so she has to leave her eyes open a little bit.
All thousand of them
in each hand. Yes. So maybe something about that, right? It could be just a practical thing of not falling asleep, but it could be that in this great vehicle, it's more open to the entire world of experience. All of it. And also I would say the Mahayana meditations are emphasizing this non-duality more. Like that samsara and nirvana really are not two. The Theravada traditions actually do not That would be kind of heretical to say that. It's about ending samsara. So therefore, it's okay to close our eyes. You know, this is just my speculation about...
What was that, the Chinese? You quoted somebody, cave or...
Did you
know what that means?
The black demon cave. Yeah, Dogen brings that up sometimes. It's one of these Zen phrases. Yeah, it's a Zen phrase. The black cave of demons. How did he say it here? The ghost cave of the black mountain. Yeah, and I think that generally it seems to refer to in Zen, a kind of, getting a little too kind of quietistic and kind of comfy and sort of closed in, like, just like, I'm not really suffering, there's no big problem here, it's just like, but I'm sort of like, it's a little too dark and, enclosed in this cave, where Zen is like bursting into the wide open light. So, something like that. So therefore, eyes open. If we're sleepy, then you can really, like, you can't really fall asleep with your eyes open. I don't think it's physically possible. So you can really open our eyes to stay awake. And integrate the appearances and space. Your eyes should always remain open, and you should breathe gently through your nose. Once you have adjusted your posture, take a deep breath. Inhale and exhale. Rock your body right and left and settle into a steady, immovable sitting position. And one of these, in the Dogen's Bendo Ho, at this point he says, rock your body right and left 7 or 8 times. He adds that in. And I don't know, that was like a later thing, so maybe he felt like people weren't rocking enough. They weren't rocking out enough. But I like to do this at the beginning. This is, I think, more for cross-legged sitting, is probably. And it's like a little bit of a stretch of, like, when you first sit down, to swing to one side, and kind of like it's sort of a yogic stretch of this side and a yogic stretch of this side. It stretches the back and the thighs, and it's comfortable. I like to do that. And, you know, Dogen doesn't say it, but I like to add in a... Could you hear that? That's why I like it.
That was caught on the tape.
Doesn't always do that. It kind of means that I haven't been maybe stretching enough. But you kind of like... a tiny yoga period before Zazen. But it's a tradition. I think Japanese way is actually, I've heard that, I haven't seen anybody do this, but you put your hands upright on your knees, and then you do these decreasing arcs. You could say it's also finding the upright place. It's a ceremony, that's all. I have this vague memory, and I might be it might be that my storehouse consciousness has like some viruses in it. Doesn't always work perfectly, but the vague memory is that when I first met our late abbot Catherine Thanis at Tassajara, the first summer I went there in 1990. I think that she talked about this at one point in Zazen. Is like you do these swinging side to side, and I remember in this hall, I would always see Catherine doing that, and she would do it very slowly. Do you remember this, Patrick? It seemed like it was really part of her or Zazen, even before a Dharma talk, yeah? I think before Dharma talks, you would do this. I'd be a little bit like, come on, aren't you going to start talking? But it's like a practice thing, and I think it tells the heart of my memories, as you said, that's not like, that rocking your body right and left is not like a preliminary practice before you start doing Zazen. That's Zazen. That's part of the Zazen. So, part of the ceremony of Zazen, as opposed to like before Zazen. You could say, strictly speaking, the moment we pop out of the womb and start crying and as a newborn babe, you could say that's really when the ceremony of Zazen starts. And then later we hear about rocking the body right and left, and then we hear about sitting still, and then the ceremony ends at our last breath, and then in the next life we can take it up again. Although Dogen would probably say, in between lives, it's good to practice Zazen too. Settle into a steady, immovable sitting position. Ready for the essential art? Think of not thinking. How do you think of not thinking? Non-thinking. This in itself is the essential art of Zazen. Some might say that's like the peak of the essay, the center of it all. After all, it's the essential art of Zazen. We could say the rest was like the inessential arts. And interestingly, in the Chinese Zazengi, it talks about a different essential art of Zazen. And in Dogen's first version of the Fukan Zazengi, he just kept the original as the essential art. So, does that mean the essential art changed over Dogen's life? Or is this the same thing? To me, they actually sound a little different. The first one that Dogen liked in the original Chinese is settle into a steady, immovable sitting position. Whenever a thought occurs, be aware of it. As soon as you're aware of it, it will vanish. If you remain for a long time forgetful of objects, you will naturally become unified. This is the essential art of Zazen. Whenever a thought occurs, be aware of it. As soon as you're aware of it, it will vanish. If you remain for a long period forgetting, and I think he means here like letting go of, being aware of and letting them drop away, objects and thoughts, you'll naturally become unified or one. This is the essential art of Zazen. And maybe over time, Dogen felt like that was too straightforward. It didn't sound Zen enough. The essential art and awakening in Zen is generally expressed through these unusual Zen stories, right? That leave our mind open. Or maybe he actually felt like he has a different understanding. I think the original Chanyan Chingwei does not say echo hensho, does not say turn the light and shine it back. But let's see if of Dogen's first one. Dogen does say it in his first essay. Because I would propose that think of not thinking. How do you do that? Non-thinking. That's just another description of turning a light around and shining it back. It comes from the story of Yaoshan, one of our ancestors, Yakuzan Igen, was sitting zazen, and a monk came up and said, "What are you doing sitting there so upright and stable?" And Yaoshan said, "I'm thinking of not thinking." And the monk asked, "How do you think of not thinking?" And Yaoshan said, "Non-thinking." So that's the kind of Zen koan. And it's been translated in different ways. Like some translations just say, "Think not thinking." But it looks like in the Chinese, the of is really there. And the of makes quite a different meaning. I think. Think not thinking, then some people would say, it's something kind of in between thinking and not thinking, or it's not quite thinking and it's not quite not thinking. Think not thinking. But thinking of not thinking is like, it sounds like directing one's mind to not thinking, or even that which doesn't think. Not thinking as a kind of like an object. So, some of you have heard this, but I appreciate this. Thomas Cleary's footnote on this passage in the Fukan Zazengi. Look, because he's a real Chinese scholar, and I trust his interpretation of the grammar here. So this is Thomas Cleary. Says, thinking of not thinking, or thinking about that which is not thinking, can also be read thinking about who isn't thinking, or thinking about what doesn't think. The particle after not thinking in the original story, this character Tay, that in the dictionary, Chinese dictionary, means like kind of like basis is one meaning of it. So like think of the basis of not thinking. But I'm sure there's more nuance to it here. That particle makes it attributive, meaning he says, referring to the unexpressed subject modified by the attributive verbal expression, which is a lot of tricky grammar talk that I don't even quite get, right? But I think he's saying that it's emphasizing the of, thinking of not thinking. It's your not thinking as almost like an object, like that which doesn't think, what doesn't think, the one who doesn't think. Is what he seems to be saying. Thus it means, think of not thinking, means contemplating the mind source, the technique of Ekko Hensho, turning the light around and shining back, which Dogen states he's recommending in this treatise as the essential art of Zazen. So saying it's just another way of saying turn the light around and shine back. Think of not thinking. The Cleary goes on to say, the story goes on further to point out that the contemplation which is done in Ekko Hensho, turning the light around, shining back, is not thinking or non-thinking. That is to say, it's not conceptual or discursive thought. In other words, the way that you turn the light around and shine it back is not a discursive conceptual activity. It's not like, I'm going to turn my awareness around now. Go, here it goes, back there. It's almost back there. It is, got it. It's like, it's more just like resting in space. Letting the light of awareness settle back into itself, into its boundless, ungraspable nature of luminosity, space-like luminosity, luminous space, bright presence, awareness that's not an object. The space, the sky is never threatened by the clouds that move through it. The mirror is never threatened by the reflections that appear on it. Which is why resting as space, as the mirror, as awareness is a liberation. It's not just an interesting exercise, right? We're looking for we're looking for the freedom that's never threatened by experiences of any kind. Yeah? Because in our usual life, we're constantly being threatened. The world is impinging on us. The experiences, even though sometimes they might be nice and everything's going fine, we're just kind of like a sitting duck, right? If a threatening experience could come anytime, threaten me. Me, the limited body, mind, self, I think I am, right? But if actually I really am space in which appears a body and mind, this I as space can't be threatened by anything, can't be harmed by anything, right? Even a raging thunderstorm, even slashing with a sword through space can't harm space, right? So, may we rest as the vast sky that cannot be harmed. As the boundless mirror that doesn't reject any images. We dedicate the merit of our practice to the complete awakening of all beings. May everyone realize their space-like, bright, clear nature. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to be coming.